Nobody can be too Jewish.
That's exactly it. You got it.
Shalom and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Judy Mandel, author of the new memoir, White Flag. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio programs and podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom and l'shana tova tika tevu v'techa temu. Tonight we begin the Jewish New Year of 5783 with Rosh Hashanah services, and tomorrow morning we will herald this shiny new year with more services and the ringing blasts of the shofar, the ram's horn that is repeatedly sounded loudly. We'll enjoy honey-oriented recipes as we hope for a sweet year. And in this post-COVID time, again gather in large groups, literally returning in person to the quest to return individually to our best selves. Truly, a holiday atmosphere prevails. Which might lead you to believe that this Jewish Rosh Hashanah is a typical celebration of the changing of the year, like the kinds of festivals we've all witnessed in America or Europe or elsewhere in the world. You know, lots of music, raucous crowds, intoxicants of all kinds, and a general holiday atmosphere. In America, New Year's is a time for lots of champagne, noisemakers, loud music, partying, more champagne, and then a day to recover. Watching parades and football and making New Year's resolutions, which often include not drinking as much at New Year's next year. The experience isn't that different in many other cultures. But while a festive atmosphere can prevail at Rosh Hashanah, that's not the orientation of this Jewish New Year. Instead of a focus on empty celebration of the changing of the last digit or two on the date, Rosh Hashanah begins the period of most serious self-examination and exploration of the entire year. The first of the 10 days of repentance, Rosh Hashanah, will extend through Yom Kippur, a week from Tuesday night and Wednesday. It's a period of tshuva, of conscientious and serious self-repair, in which we look hard at the year we've just lived, try to repair the damage we've done to others, and seek to return to the best version of ourselves that we can be. This process, called tshuva, traditionally, means repentance and return in Hebrew. In Israel, it's called a cheshbon ha-nefesh, an accounting of the soul, and it can be both challenging and rewarding. It's the original self-help experience. Jews everywhere turn inward in the hope of changing our lives for the better. We are led through this process in Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur services as we explore how we've lived over the past 12 months and how we wish to live in the next 12 months. This has been another tumultuous year, a time of moving from pandemic to communal reengagement, of the unexpected explosion of a terrible European war in Ukraine, of economic uncertainty, inflation, rising interest rates, and societal chaos. If we have learned anything over the past few years, it might simply be that no one knows or can predict the events of the coming year except God. We don't control any of those big things. We do control our own actions, if we choose to do so, and we do have the ability to change our approach and our behaviors. And that's what we will try to do, beginning with Rosh Hashanah tonight and tomorrow. The prayers and sermons on Rosh Hashanah this Jewish New Year are focused both on celebrating the new and affirming the choices we all have available to us to change for the better. We know what we can't control, but we also know what we can control, our own actions and attitudes, our own effort and behavior. In a way, Rosh Hashanah is the ultimate festival affirming human freedom, a central concept in Judaism. We believe everyone has the ability to make choices about how they will act and to continue to choose a course in life to follow. This is true even though a central prayer of these high holy days says that on this Yom HaDin, this day of divine judgment, it's determined who shall live and who shall die and by what means. Well, that is perhaps the case. But how we live is the central point of life, after all, and that is not predetermined by God or any supernatural force. It's up to us. And on this festival, we begin the hard but beautiful process of making the best possible choices for this coming year. So when we pray on Rosh Hashanah for a good year, the festival begins tonight at sunset, continuing through Monday for Reform Jews and all the Jews of Israel, and through Tuesday night for conservative and Orthodox Jews outside of Israel. I hope that your prayers, your hopes and dreams for this coming 5783 year will be fulfilled for good and for making your own lives the best that they can be. To play us in on this Rosh Hashanah theme, tonight and tomorrow, remember, here's the spectacular conclusion of a setting of a prayer from the shofar service tomorrow morning. Atani Gleita Banan Kevodecha, you God revealed yourself to us on Mount Sinai, as sung by cantor Yaakov Lemmer. Es akuloys vi es alapidim vi es kolashifar ve es That was cantor Yaakov Lemmer dramatically singing the ending of Atana Gleita for the shofar service for Rosh Hashanah tomorrow morning. Rosh Hashanah for all Jews everywhere in the world is tonight and tomorrow, September 25th and 26th. It's time to join a synagogue near you, like my own, Congregation Beit Simcha, right here in Tucson, Arizona, where I live. Our guest this morning, Judy Mandel, has written a piercing memoir about the profound challenge addiction poses to all relatives who love an addict. Her book is called White Flag, and her story is powerful and painful. Hear it when we come back in a moment on Too Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome the Too Jewish Art guest this morning. Judy Mandel is the author of a brand new memoir. It's her second nonfiction book. It's called White Flag, and it's a memoir that really deals with addiction in a quite serious and deeply personal way, both from the perspective of the person who is addicted and the person who is trying to help them or enabling them in the course of the experience. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Oh, thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
So, this is a tough book. It's really good. It's clear, as someone who has dealt with people with addiction issues through most of his adult life. I can tell you it feels very true. Tell us why you decided to write this.
Well, first, thank you for saying that. And, you know, having personal experience, I value, you know, what you're saying about the book. It certainly came from a very deep place for me. And maybe I'll start with the title, you know, White Flag.
Right.
That, you know, usually represents surrender. And in this case, it does in different ways. Surrender of what I realized a person with substance use disorder needs to do for themselves is really the only way that they do recover. And knowing when that is possible and when it's not possible. And surrender of myself, this is also, I call it an investigational memoir because it's about my experience as well, you know, trying to help my niece in this case.
Your niece, you became kind of a surrogate mom for her, right?
I think so. I hesitate to say that, but I tried to be there for her when she needed me. And I think that was what I thought I was doing the right things for her, but I really came from a place of not knowing. I didn't have all the information I needed. And this book is really examining, you know, to understand the causes of substance use disorder and trying to answer some of the painful questions. You know, why can some people have a drink at a bar and other people have to close the bar if they have one? Well, you know, why is it, you know, how does generational trauma couple with, you know, your immediate life? How does abuse play a role? And what happens after you become, you know, addicted to whatever substance it is? What happens in your brain that stops you from doing what you want to do? You know, in my case, I know my niece wanted to stop. She talked about it often. She tried very hard. And understanding that maybe there are things you want to do and you just can't act on them when brain chemistry has changed after years of using drugs. And understanding that helped me to come to terms with the story and you know, her ultimate, she did overdose. So, you know, coming to terms with that and what I could have done, what I couldn't have done, and raising my own white flag, realizing what was possible and what was not possible.
It's a terrific book. We will talk much more with Judy Bandel about the experience of that went into the creation of this memoir, White Flag, and about the book as well when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish. The Jewish High Holy Days are almost here. Why not join Congregation Beit Simcha? Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a fabulous Jewish synagogue in the Catalina foothills in northwest Tucson, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this fall. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area and providing weekly Shabbat services, Friday night and Saturday morning, Youth and Adult Education Academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and guests in our sanctuary. Call 520-276-5675 for more information. That's 520-276-5675. Religious school has begun for school-aged children or grandchildren. Join us in our fabulous Hebrew school, Bar and Bat Mitzvah programs, Torah Tykes experience, confirmation and teen programs in a fun, relaxed, excellent setting with great Jewish learning. For Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah starts tonight. Members and guests are warmly welcomed. call 520-276-5675 or go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up. Beit Simcha Synagogue is located at 2270 West Ina Road on the north side of Ina, just west of La Cholla, near the entrance of the Foothills Mall in our own building. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Join us every Friday night in person or on our Facebook page. That's Beit Simcha Tucson. Shabbat evening celebration services are at 6:30 p.m. Shabbat morning services are at 10 a.m. Torah studies first at 9 o'clock, all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. And, of course, our High Holy Day services with me and our wonderful Beit Simcha musicians are tonight, tomorrow, and next week for Yom Kippur. Facebook page is Beit Simcha Tucson. Our musical services are there also. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are offered live and on Zoom. Our wonderful religious school is also available in blended format. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org or call 520-276-5675. 520-276-5675. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in 5783 in the newest and fastest growing and most wonderful Jewish community in all of Southern Arizona. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or a criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit our website, 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, TOOJewishRadio.com, streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store, is very popular Jewish podcasts. Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 175,000 downloads on Podbean and now also on Spotify. Post a rating, review 2 Jewish wherever you listen to our podcast. Those comments help. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of Southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
And L'shana tova tikatevu v'techatemu.
You too.
Be written and sealed for a good, sweet year. You had an interesting call recently about women singing. Tell us about that.
So I have a friend who grew up here, who went to the University of Arizona and worked for a decade and then decided to go to med school. And so he's now in Chicago in his second year of medical school, although he's in his mid to late 30s.
Second careers are not bad.
Right. And so just last night, as a matter of fact, he texted me with a question saying that he'd been watching a television series and there were Orthodox men in a room who got up and left when a woman started singing. And my friend's question was, is there a prohibition across the board against men listening to a woman singing? And I know something about this. The issue is Kol Isha. I thought that it was confined to leading prayer services and reading from the Torah and sort of in services officially, right, and not across the board. But I imagine that in some Orthodox communities or some variations of Orthodoxy,
ultra-Orthodoxy, I would say, extreme Orthodoxy,
they extend this prohibition in with the principle of like building a fence around the Torah to make sure that men never hear a woman singing. Can you expand on this, please?
I mean, as you mentioned, the Talmudic prohibition is kol isha erva. It's based on that principle that the voice of a woman leads a man to licentiousness. He hears your voice, he won't be able to restrain himself. He'll engage in sexual adventures he wouldn't otherwise. Why that's true in the Talmud for men hearing a woman sing and not for women hearing a man sing, I don't know. They obviously never witnessed the charisma.
Maybe because the Talmud was written by men.
Probably, you think. But it's an interesting prohibition. It essentially reigned supreme in Judaism in the synagogue. As you mentioned, women couldn't be called up to the Torah, couldn't chant the Aliyah, couldn't chant from the Torah, couldn't chant leading services officially until into the 20th century, even though there are some examples of female cantors doing recordings and stuff. That obviously has changed tremendously in liberal Judaism, but among the, and I don't mean politically, but among the most of the Jews of the world, but in Orthodoxy, of course, women are, in ultra-Orthodoxy, certainly, and even in many mainstream Orthodox situations, most, I would say, women are not permitted to come up and lead services. Now, could that prohibition be extended so that men should never hear a woman singing? Well, I don't think that's true even for most Orthodox Jews. Among the ultra-Orthodox, it probably is, unless you're underage and your mother is singing you a lullaby or something. And once you start extending a prohibition, a susyag la-Torah, as you said, extending the fence around the Torah, that fence sometimes goes so far as to cover the entire earth. So I think that that's probably the source of that idea that you can't even hear a woman sing happy birthday to you or somehow it would lead you astray.
But then you wonder about, like, what about a family seder? Are women supposed to keep their mouth shut during Chag Gadiah or other happy songs?
Yeah, it seems...
That are not really prayers.
It seems preposterous, but in some, you know, if you take that prohibition, which of course is not binding in Reform Judaism and it isn't binding for most conservative congregations, it nonetheless can be applied in a very broad way. I don't know. I haven't been to an ultra-Orthodox Seder. I've been to Orthodox Seders where everybody's singing, and I know many modern Orthodox Jews that sing together in choirs, male and female together, and the woman might not lead services, but they don't have any problem hearing that voice singing all kinds of other stuff, including Jewish music, including prayer texts where they don't mention God's name, in fact. So I think there's a broad range, and it's dangerous to say, well, Orthodox Jews do this in this area, because there's a broad range of Orthodox ways of doing things, and there are different flavors of Orthodoxy, just as there are within non-Orthodox communities. You know, the whole principle of kol isha erva, the voice of a woman leads a man astray, just fascinating to me, because if you've ever watched the male singers with the women completely in love with the rock stars or the pop singers, or, you know, it's been going on a long time. I don't know, Frank Sinatra, I take it all the way back. It seems like a ridiculous concept, but it is in the Talmud, there's no doubt. And maybe we'll talk about a less two guys talking about how women should be allowed to sing to men. Tom, again, Shana Tova, good new year.
And the same to you and your family.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Two Jewish as a public service. It's early afternoon. She's sitting on a chaise lounge at the Fontainebleau Hotel in Miami when a very, very handsome man comes over to the next lounge. He's just gorgeous. He takes off his robe, and she can see his physique is also outstanding. She says to him, I haven't seen you before. Are you new here? Yes, I am, he says. She says, where have you been? He says, I've been away for about 18 years. She says, really? Where were you? He says, well, to tell you the truth, I've been in jail. She says, really? What happened? He says, I got into a fight. I killed my wife. I choked the dog. I got rid of the children. So they sent me to jail. She says, that's very interesting. So you're not married. That was the old Jewish joke of the week. Special feature of Two Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. If you knew you were living your final day on earth, how would you spend your last hours? According to the traditional commentaries, on Moses' 120th birthday, he spent his last day dedicated to addressing the needs of his community. He visited each of the tribes and offered words of encouragement. Even on his last day of life, Moses dedicated himself to the Israelites, giving himself to his community, his congregation. On this first Shabbat of 5783, we'll read the Torah portion of Vayelech, which follows that final day and Moses' last interactions with God. It's clear that although he has reached the extremely advanced age of 120, still he has a clear mind and physical strength. He has retained his virility. His death is a kind of sacred retirement, rather than the decline and eventual failing that so many of us experience. At the end, Moses uses his remaining energy and seeks to ensure the success of his people through dedication and devotion. Well, this Shabbat is also Shabbat Shuvah, the Sabbath of repentance, a time of return to the best that is within us, a time to make peace with those with whom we have conflicts, a time to atone for our errors in the past year. Vayelech teaches us that it's also a time to renew our commitment to our congregation, to our synagogue community, and to dedicate our resources and energy to ensure that it continues to thrive in this new year. On his final day of life, Moses demonstrated a sense of devotion to the well-being of the Jewish people and to the Kehillah, the sacred community. On this coming Shabbat Shuvah, may we also be able to follow his great example. When we come back on Two Jewish, our guest this morning, Judy Mandel, shares her gripping personal story of dealing with a beloved relative's self-destruction and addiction. It's all in her new memoir, White Flag, and we can learn from her experiences. Find out how when we return in a moment on Two Jewish.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Robert Sarver, the Jewish owner of the NBA's Phoenix Suns and WNBA's Phoenix Mercury, announced he will seek buyers for the two franchises as he serves a one-year suspension from the NBA and WNBA for misconduct. Sarver, a real estate businessman with a net worth of about $1 billion, who purchased the teams back in 2004, received the NBA's maximum fine of $10 million after an investigation found a pattern of inappropriate and abusive behavior, including racist remarks and sexual harassment towards employees. Sarver reportedly used the N-word multiple times, always when quoting other people, but still. Sarver said, "As a man of faith, I believe in atonement and the path to forgiveness. I expected that the commissioner's one-year suspension would provide the time for me to focus, make amends, and remove my personal controversy from the teams that I and so many fans love." The 60-year-old Tucson native, who's a member of Temple Chai of Phoenix, was, of course, referencing tshuva, the Jewish concept of repentance, the thematic centerpiece of the High Holy Days that begin tonight. In the interests of full disclosure, I know Robert Sarver. He grew up at my former congregation, the now disappeared Temple Emmanuel of Tucson, and I officiated at family life cycle events for the Sarvers. Twice, many years ago, he even got me really good seats to Suns games for my kids. Of course, he stopped doing that. Yeah, so what the heck. Robert Sarver served on the board of and held fundraising roles at the Jewish Federation of Southern Arizona, the Desert Caucus Political Action Committee here, and he and his family were heavily involved with the Tucson Jewish Community Center and Jewish Family and Children's Services here. Sarver further explained his decision to sell these two basketball franchises, which are expected to bring in billions of dollars. But in our current unforgiving climate, it has become painfully clear that it is no longer possible to do this, tshuva, he means, that whatever good I have done or could still do is outweighed by things I said in the past. For those reasons, I'm beginning the process of seeking buyers for the Suns and the Mercury. Immediately after Sarver's suspension was announced, several NBA stars, including the Suns' own Chris Paul, criticized the league for what the players deemed to be an inadequate punishment. Some called for Sarver to sell the team or even face a lifetime ban. Robert Sarver's suspension echoed that of Washington Commanders owner Dan Snyder and former LA Clippers owner Donald T. Sterling, both of whom also happened to be Jewish, and who were similarly accused of using their positions of power to mistreat employees. In a continuing story, the LGBTQ group seeking recognition from Yeshiva University in New York agreed to put its demands on hold while their lawsuit moves through the courts in the appellate process. The YU Pride Alliance's announcement came in response to a move by the Modern Orthodox University to withhold support from all campus clubs rather than recognize the Pride Alliance. We do not want YU to punish our fellow students by ending all student activities while it circumvents its responsibilities, the LGBTQ group's statement said. YU is attempting to hold all of its students hostage while it deploys manipulative legal tactics, all in an effort to avoid treating our club equally. The group called its decision painful and difficult. Last week, the U.S. Supreme Court denied YU's request of a stay or a pause in recognizing the Pride Alliance and returned the case to the New York courts. September 16th, just before Shabbat, the university announced to students that instead of allowing the Pride Alliance on campus, it was ordered to do so by a New York court, it would instead suspend all undergraduate club activity while it pursued its claims in the New York Appellate Division. The suspension of the club activity riled all students on campus, apparently, and its motivation angered supporters of the Pride Alliance off campus. The Pride Alliance has now stepped back, given Yeshiva University a little more time, but this issue will certainly not go away. The classic Jewish children's books, All of a Kind Family, written by Sidney Taylor about an early 20th century Lower East Side family, are being developed into a new TV series. The books show the girl-oriented family celebrating Jewish and American holidays, wrestling with chores, experiencing illnesses, and, of course, enjoying candy. The series is being developed by the Jim Henson Company, you know, of the Muppets, with Jordana Lewis Jaffe as the showrunner. My grandfather and his family immigrated from Hungary to New York City in 1922 during the same era as the All of a Kind Family books. Hallie Stanford, president of television for the Jim Henson Company, said, "As a young Jewish girl growing up in America, I saw myself and my sister in these rich, detailed stories and our Jewish heritage celebrated." As the story goes, unbeknownst to the author, Sidney Taylor, her husband submitted her unpublished manuscript of bedtime stories for the Charles W. Follett Award, and it subsequently won that back in 1951. That jump-started Sidney Taylor's career as a highly celebrated children's book author. The books are some of the most widely read depictions of life of American Jewish children in the 20th century. In turn, a prominent Jewish book award has been named after Sidney Taylor since 1968. The Association of Jewish Libraries has presented the Sidney Taylor Book Award to outstanding books for children and teens that authentically portray the Jewish experience. And now those books will be a TV series. Well, they are charming books. I must note that Sidney Taylor's daughter lived in Spartanburg, South Carolina, location of my first pulpit as a rabbi, and I ended up being her rabbi in the late 1990s. She showed me some of the first editions of those books. Lovely person. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Round the World. Our brothers, the love of Israel. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Judy Mandel. I think it's fair to say this was a second career, writing memoirs and becoming a full-time creative writer. You were a reporter, you did publicity work and other kinds of things, and then came back and created first your initial book and then White Flag. You noted, and I'll dig right in, your niece tragically ODs. There's a point, it's late in the book, I hope I'm not, you know, giving anything away, but you note that even though she was raised without a lot of Jewish content in her life, she always remembered her family's yard sites, and that lighting that candle became, I don't know, to me it seems symbolic, a kind of white flag for you as well, but tell us about that.
Well, she always wanted to delve into her Jewishness and did research on her own. You know, she want, and through me, because I was probably the one in the family that was, you know, I won't say I'm observant, but I'm semi-observant. And I don't know what that means. But
I don't know what that means either, but it's okay. You're Jewish. It's all right.
I am Jewish. And, you know, so she talked to me about it, and, you know, I knew that she felt Jewish, and she tried to do the things she could do to symbolize that. So when the holidays came around and Hanukkah came around, she wanted to light candles. And she saw me, you know, I would send her pictures of us lighting candles, because at that point she couldn't manage it. And she asked me to send her, you know, every day of Hanukkah, she wanted to see the candles, which was very touching to me. And I thought it was symbolic. Yeah, it meant a lot to me.
Your sister was older, but you kind of became her caretaker too, didn't you, at times?
Yeah, it seemed like the roles reversed a bit in that way. You know, my sister was badly burned in an accident when she was 2 years old. But my first memoir is about that tragedy and our family and what happened in that case when a plane crashed into our home and in 1952. So my sister her life was traumatic in every way. She had many surgeries and trying to reconstruct and skin graft, and she was burned 80% of her body. So that was Cheryl's mother. And so this book is really looking at the generational trauma of how does that affect everyone in the family. And it certainly does. There's no way that you cannot be affected by, especially your mother going through something all the time. And there are, of course, there are other things that I didn't know about that I found out as I was researching this book, that I found out about my own family. And some surprises and things that I thought may have happened and found out that they did happen. So there's that kind of surprise for me through writing that, you know, I figure things out through writing, which I know a lot of writers say, but it's really the truth. That going through the writing of this helped me figure it out.
When you talk about Cheryl, your niece, you talk about, you know, she was bright, she was a bookworm, she played violin. How could this great little girl become an addict, driven to prostitution, dying so young of an overdose? Is it just, did you come, I guess I'm struggling myself. What do you think the answers were for you?
From what I'm piecing together, I believe it was a combination of sexual abuse and generational trauma, and also not knowing in society, not knowing how to deal with people who do have substance use disorder. I think that was a big part of it. Hopefully some of those things may be changing. And that if people can look at their loved one who has this issue and look at them as a person and treat them as the loved one that they still are in there, I think that makes a huge difference. And meeting them where they are, you know, meeting them with help to keep them alive until they're ready to raise their white flag. I think that is the ultimate goal, I think, for anyone who has someone in their family or a loved one who's suffering with this, is to just remember that's still your person.
There's still love, there's still commitment. You talk about the way that addicts deceive, they lie to protect their addiction, create chaos around them so that people don't see the addiction that's at the heart of the problem. Did you find yourself not deceived as much along the way as time wore on?
I think anyone that is in some kind of a situation with a loved one's substance abuse will find that they will be deceived. There will be lies. There will be, because it's just part of the disease. It's just part of it. I definitely was deceived. But I should have maybe known. I say I should have, but there are things that in the back of my mind I knew were not true, that what I was being told as this was going on. And I found out that was true through my writing. And also, look, I had her journals from when she was homeless and struggling through this, especially this last period of time. And I wound up getting her text messages from her phone, which was really the enlightening piece for me, when I could see the text that she would write to me about, I'm going on this job interview and I have this place I'm going to look at, you know, to live. And then in another minute, she's meeting somebody for a drug deal. And I mean, I can tell the timeline. I actually made a spreadsheet of of those texts so that I could match up the time of when things happened and when I would send her money for, you know, to go to the drugstore and where that money wound up. So, you know, those were enlightening pieces for me to understand and to still, you know, and to still understand that she wanted to straighten out her life. She just couldn't do it. And whether she was ready or not, and maybe she would have been ready if she hadn't overdosed, and maybe if there were some more support systems in place, and maybe, you know, you keep saying that.
You make it clear in the book, and obviously Cheryl says it, there's very little in the way of real rehabilitation or treatment for drug addiction in the prison system, which is where she ends up. it only increases the likelihood of people becoming addicts and staying addicts, right?
I think so. And, I know, and she was transferred from Ohio to Kentucky in the almost 2 years she was in prison. And in Ohio, I think there was some kind of program, and in Kentucky, there was nothing at all. I also don't think there was any medical-assisted treatment, which I believe is the key to helping people recover. From what I'm reading now, and I also want to stress that I'm no expert on this. You know, this is a personal story, and you know, I learned what I learned from this one journey. But there are more things that can be done in jail. And also, is that really the solution to lock people up? I don't think so. I don't think so.
You make it clear that others in the family turned their back on her because of her addiction. And you mentioned, I think at one point, that, you know, she would come and visit and leave and jewelry would be missing. That's just a reality with addiction, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. I know, she did take jewelry from her mother. I think even from her grandmother. I have to say they forgave her, knowing what it was all about. Especially, you know, her mother always forgave her until she couldn't anymore. The felonies that, you know, once you have that on your record,
yeah,
that's very difficult to come back from. I found out when I was even trying to get her a bank account. Where do they put their money? They can't get a bank account. I don't know what they get a paid, you know, credit card that they keep putting money into, and that's the only way they can keep their money. But they're always at risk. Because people know if they do have a small job, they're carrying that money with them. So that's a very big problem. And just finding employment.
I want to come back to that notion of yard site candles and lighting the memorial candle. You say that Cheryl did it for her mother, and I think for her grandmother also.
Yeah, she did.
You come back to that at the end where you're doing a talk, and it's her yard site. Tell us about that connection a little bit emotionally. You speak about it beautifully in the book.
Well, it is something that I remember for all my family members, and sadly, I'm lighting a lot of candles.
Yeah, it happens to us, doesn't it?
It does happen. And I do try to remember, you know, all of them and say a prayer when their yard site comes around. And especially, I know that Cheryl would be pleased that I do that. I know she'd be glad that I remember her in that loving way, and not as the last couple of years of her life, and you know the times in between when she certainly, you know, had her issues, went up and down. She had a period of time when, you know, she had a job and she rented a house and everything seemed on the surface to be okay, but I really didn't know if that was the case, and turns out it probably wasn't. Lighting the candles definitely brings an amount of peace, and grateful that I had her for as long as we did. That's the only thing I can say. Regretful that I didn't know more then, and that will always be the case too.
I want to thank Judy Mandel for a great visit here on Too Jewish. The book is called White Flag. Your last book, Replacement Child, is also an excellent book. Both of them are memoirs. Both of them are a little tough. Is your next book going to be more on a lighter theme, perhaps?
Well, I don't know. I never know what I'm going to write next. It seems to be something that I have to talk about, I have to write about. And Maybe I should try for that. Maybe a romance novel.
Or a YA romance novel or something.
Yeah.
Judy, where can people go to find out more about you, to find out more about White Flag?
Well, they can go to my website, judymandel.com. The book is available everywhere. It's available for pre-order. It comes out officially October 1st.
Okay.
So anywhere at all, Amazon, local bookstore, anywhere.
Thank you so much. Best of luck.
Thank you so much for having me.
When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Two Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week, which will also be the next Jewish year, 5783, when our guest will be Isabel Vincent, author of Overture of Hope, a fascinating true story about two British ladies who literally saved the Jewish opera stars of Europe from annihilation by the Nazis. Great story. Don't forget, join us at Congregation Beit Simcha in person tonight and tomorrow for Rosh Hashanah and next week for Yom Kippur. And of course, every Friday night for services in Onig Shabbat starting at 6:30 p.m., Saturday morning too, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading and Kiddush, all live in person and available on our Facebook page, as are the High Holy Days. The Jewish High Holy Days are here now. Join us in person tonight. Come to our Facebook page. Come online. Go to www.beitsimchatucson.org, BEITSIMCHATucson.org, for information on how to attend Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and celebrate the new year with me at Beit Simcha. Our playout this morning comes from Israel, a young artist's recording of Ehud Manor and Nurit Hirsch's classic Hebrew song, Bashana Haba'ah. In the year to come, all kinds of lovely things will happen. Just you see how great it will be this coming year. Please, God, may it be so, as we say. My friends, have a Shana Tova Umetuka, a good and a sweet new year. A Shavua Tov, a good first week of 5783, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly for ourselves, for our community, for our families, and for the entire world of peace.
Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Hashanah.
sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.